Greetings, and welcome to the Atlas Financial Holdings 2014 first quarter financial results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A question and answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to your host, Mr. Scott Wolny, Chief Executive Officer of Atlas Financial. Thank you, sir. You may begin.
Thank you very much, Donna, and good morning, everyone. With me today is Paul Romano, our Vice President and CFO. You may have noticed that we released earnings a little earlier this quarter. Our plan this year is to consistently issue results relatively earlier than in prior years. I want to thank Paul and his team for making this possible. In this morning's call, I'll provide a brief update on our business operations in the market. Paul will review our first quarter 2014 results in detail, and then I'll return for closing comments. As usual, we'll be taking questions at the conclusion of our prepared remarks. Before I begin, I'll turn it over to Paul.
Thank you, Scott, and good morning, everyone. Yesterday, after market close, Atlas issued its 2014 first quarter financial results. Copies of this press release are available at the Investor Relations section at the company's website at www.atlas-fin.com. We will be utilizing a slideshow presentation in conjunction with this call. This presentation is available on our website's Investor Relations section and then under the Earnings Release Info selection. We welcome each of you to review this presentation and follow along. On this call, Atlas may make forward-looking statements regarding the company, its subsidiaries, and businesses. Such statements are based on the current expectations of the management of each entity. The words anticipate, expect, believe, may, should, estimate, project, outlook, forecast, or similar words are used to identify such forward-looking information. The forward-looking events and circumstances discussed on this call may not occur and could differ materially as a result of known and unknown risk factors and uncertainties affecting the companies, including risks regarding the insurance industry, economic factors, and the equity markets generally, and the risk factors discussed in the risk factors section of its Form 10-K for the year ended December 31, 2013. Except as required by applicable securities laws, forward-looking statements speak only as of the date on which they are made, and the company and its subsidiaries undertake no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. When discussing our business operations, we may use certain terms of art which are not defined under U.S. GAAP. In the event of any unintentional difference between the presentation materials and our GAAP results, investors should rely on the financial information in our public filings. All amounts discussed on this call are in U.S. dollars unless otherwise indicated. With that, I'd now like to turn the call back over to Scott.
Thanks, Paul. The first quarter was a strong quarter for Atlas, as our company continued the positive momentum developed over the past 2 years. We achieved significant year-over-year underwriting gains and strong bottom-line performance in each segment of our light commercial vehicle business, specifically insurance for taxicabs, limousines, and paratransit operators. The company's combined ratio improved by 4.6 percentage points over the prior year. Of note, the Q1 ratio includes certain expenses related to management compensation that we'll detail later on the call. Pro forma income, excluding discretionary amounts paid in 2014 for 2013 results, would have been 27 cents per share, which is a better base from which to consider future earnings potential. In the quarter, we saw a record level of opportunities to write incremental business as a result of the very favorable trends in the competitive environment discussed on previous calls, which led to the 46.1% increase in gross written premium related to core business. Historically, Q1 had been a slower growth quarter when our company's Illinois business matured. While we're only halfway to what we believe to be proportionate market share in Illinois, it is currently our most mature territory where we have approximately 9% of our niche market. As a result of increased volume, coupled with the expectations for continuing increased workload, we began hiring primarily at the entry level to ensure that we're not caught flat-footed in a high-margin time in the market cycle. Overall, we've not seen any significant deviation in the improving rate environment in our markets since our last call in March either. we're seeing steady price increases while continuing to win market share across a wider and more diversified geographic base. Slide 4 should be familiar to a number of you that have followed our company for some time. We currently write in a widely dispersed base of 40 states plus the District of Columbia. As we've stated in the past, our goal is to achieve a proportionate share of the market in each state where Atlas actively writes our specialized lines of insurance, and we're responsibly moving down that path. Gross premiums written during the first quarter increased 39.7%. As I noted earlier, the increase relative to core lines of business was actually higher at 46.1%. As a result, our year-over-year growth rate as a percentage seen in the first quarter may not be representative of expected growth in other quarters. Also, as we continue to write a more geographically diversified book of business, the impact of the seasonality should flatten out over time as traditionally smaller quarters like Q2 and Q4 catch up to Q1 and Q3. In addition to Illinois, other larger volume states include New York, California, Michigan, and Texas. We continue to pursue incremental opportunities in these states and in the remaining states, which are currently relatively small in terms of premium written. Slide 5 provides more detail regarding geographic premium distribution. We believe we're winning business from our competitors largely due to the hyper-focused nature of our model. In addition, I've spoken often of our recapturing business from agents with whom our subsidiaries did business years ago. It's important to note that we're still in the midst of this recapture process and expect the transition of business back to us from these agents to continue for the next 12 to 18 months. A few years ago, our agents wrote nearly $150 million in commercial auto business through our three subsidiaries, American Country, American Service, and Gateway. This premium level was achieved in predominantly 5 states compared to the 40 we're in now. We feel that Atlas's commitment to our independent agents is one of true partnership, and our proposition is straightforward. We're committed to delivering the highest level of service and expertise to the niche we collectively serve and expect to win a proportionate share of their business in return. As we've mentioned before, the addressable market in our niche is approximately $1.5 billion in premium, and we believe that a 20% market share over time will be proportionate for Atlas as a market leader. We're working to balance growth with our focus on maximizing return on equity, which we expect to generate through underwriting profit and performance over time. We believe that operating margin and leverage, which are outlined on slides 6 and 7, are key to delivering above average returns. Atlas's combined ratio and underwriting profit are improving year over year, simultaneous with our increased operating leverage. As we've mentioned previously, we believe that operating leverage of approximately 2x net written premium to surplus is a reasonable lever. During Q1, we achieved a combined ratio of 93.5% compared to 98.1% in the prior year. As I mentioned earlier, this number includes expenses related to our discretionary management incentive plan for 2013, which rolled entirely through the income statement in Q1 2014. Let me take a minute to discuss this point to ensure that the basis for the pro forma operating income of 27 cents per share related to the first quarter 2014 is as clear as possible. We certainly don't want to overstate the actual result, but do want to make sure that we're as transparent as possible in terms of each component of our results. Our incentive compensation plan is based on a return on equity target set annually by our board. Historically, these payments have been a Q1 expense because these discretionary bonus decisions were made after the close of the full fiscal year. In the past, when these bonuses were relatively small, they did not have a significant impact on the quarter. Based on our current expectations for ROE and to avoid any future surprises, going forward, we'll be accruing for these potential bonuses throughout the year, so these expenses will no longer disproportionately affect Q1 in future periods. On this basis, 5 cents per share in Q1 2014 related to discretionary amounts paid on the 2013 results. The 27 cents per share pro forma figure is what earnings would have looked like had we been using our going forward approach to bonus accrual all along. I would also like to note that Atlas's executive team received 100% of their bonuses for 2013 in stock at market value as opposed to cash in Q1 2014. Not one member of Atlas's executive team has sold a share in the open market. Now let me shift to what we're seeing across our distribution channel. We have internal processes to evaluate the effectiveness of our ability to obtain rate increases, which, among other things, is measured based on hit ratio and retention rates. On slides 8 and 9, we note the trends we're seeing for these key metrics. For the past few quarters, we've been very open that we're pricing to a 60% fully developed loss ratio or better. In many areas, we're able to price to more attractive margins based on favorable market changes. Our current carried loss ratio is at 63.4%. We feel that a conservative approach to recognizing the benefit of pricing activities is appropriate over the near term. However, we do expect that reported losses will trend towards our pricing targets over time. Provided the market trends we're seeing continue, we believe that there will be incremental opportunity to further improve our target profit margin through pricing. We speak with our agents often, and of even more importance, we actually listen. They understand that we will achieve mutual success through underwriting performance and that we will not compromise our bottom-line results for the sake of premium growth. Understanding and being able to communicate our value proposition to the marketplace is also critical when selling our product. Our message has been that a stable and consistent approach is the appropriate one, and we're achieving stable and consistent rate increases while growing our business as a result. Before I turn it over to Paul to outline the financials, let me touch briefly on the larger macroeconomic market environment. Our target accounts are owner-operators as well as small and medium-sized fleets in the taxi, limo, and paratransit sectors. As illustrated on slide 10, these size accounts continue to support more attractive pricing than their larger counterparts. While the broader commercial auto market is experiencing low single-digit rate increases in recent quarters, as illustrated on slide 11, we're seeing increases in the mid to high single digits. Our customers can crash a lot, but typically with relatively low severity. As a result, we have multiple opportunities to provide a benefit through our specialized claim process, which demonstrates real value relative to the more generic processes employed by our competitors. It's not an easily replicable model. Larger competitors that only have a small portion of their business in our markets are either withdrawing because it's not big enough relative to their scale or just don't have the attention and commitment to the specialty niche that we do. Smaller competitors are generally responding to the market environment by increasing rates. This additional buoyancy is helping to build momentum in terms of future potential rate increases. Recent data for commercial auto in general indicates that large commercial auto insurers are still struggling to beat their cost of capital with underwriting results. We think this is driven primarily by the low rates and challenged loss experience related to heavy commercial lines, such as large fleet truck, in recent years. In any case, we are definitely not seeing softening in our niche at this time. With that, I'll turn the call over to Paul for a review of our financial results.
Thanks, Scott. I'll briefly go through the quarterly highlights, but welcome each of you to review our press release and filings should you have any further questions. As shown on slide 13 of the presentation, Atlas's gross premium written increased 39.7% to $31.2 million in the first quarter of 2014, a 46.1% increase from our core commercial auto lines. Net premium written increased 91.2% to $29.2 million for the three-month period ended March 31, 2014, compared to $15.3 million for the three-month period ended March 31, 2013, and increased 43.2% when compared to the three-month period ended December 31, 2013. The accounting treatment for the reinsurance transaction related to our acquisition of Gateway in Q1 of 2013 resulted in a one-time reduction in net premium written, which was detailed at the time we released earnings for that quarter. Adjusting for that one-time event, the year-over-year increase in net premium written was 41.7%, which is similar to the increase we experienced in gross premium written. Our net premiums earned ratably over the term of their policies, which are generally 12 months in length. Net premium earned was $22 million in the three-month period ended March 31, 2014, a 38.2% increase compared to $15.9 million in the three-month period ended March 31, 2013, and a 7% increase relative to the three-month period ended December 31, 2013. Let me take a moment now to summarize our operating ratios for the quarter. For the first quarter of 2014, Atlas's loss ratio was 63.4% compared to 64.6% in the prior year period, while remaining flat at 63.4% relative to the fourth quarter of 2013. As Scott mentioned earlier, we are pricing to a 60% or better loss ratio and have been pleased with the stable loss ratio percentage across our larger base of policies. We are carefully monitoring actual losses relative to expectations prior to giving full credit for our pricing actions in recent years. Acquisition costs were $3.1 million for the first quarter of 2014, a 14.1% of net premiums earned, compared to 13.9% in the prior year period. As mentioned on prior calls, the range of state premium taxes and the impact of geographic weighting of the business written will influence this ratio quarter to quarter. The other underwriting expense ratio was 16% in the three-month period ended March 31, 2014, compared to 19.2% in the three-month period ended March 31, 2013, and 13.4% for the three-month period ended December 31, 2013. The Q1 2014 other underwriting expense ratio included the management incentive expense that Scott mentioned earlier. For the three-month period ended March 31, 2014, we incurred $827,000 of expense related to discretionary management incentive compensation, which was paid to our 19-person leadership team in the first quarter of 2014, $500,000 of which was the amount in excess of the bonus accrual established in the first quarter of 2014. The amount in excess of the accrual had an effect of approximately 2.3 percentage points on the other underwriting expense ratio for the three-month period ended March 31, 2014. Net of this 2.3%, on a pro forma basis, our expense ratio was 13.7%. As we've consistently communicated, we expect our expense ratio to fall within the 10 to 12% range by the end of this year. Although we are hiring moderately to ensure that we could take full advantage of the favorable market cycle, we continue to expect our expenses to move into this range with increased scale. The company's combined ratio for the first quarter 2014 was 93.5%, compared to 98.1% in the prior year quarter. Atlas's operating income for the three-month period ended March 31, 2014, was $2.2 million compared to $911,000 in the three-month period ended March 31, 2013. Eliminating the impact of the discretionary management incentive compensation expenses in excess of the amounts accrued in the first quarter of 2014, on a pro forma adjusted basis, operating income was $2.7 million for the three-month period ended March 31, 2014. Net income for the quarter was $2.2 million, a 265% increase over the $602,000 reported in the first quarter of 2013. On a per-share basis, we reported 22 cents per share during the first quarter of 2014 on 9.9 million diluted average common shares, compared to 5 cents per share in the prior year, based on 7.1 million diluted average common shares. As Scott mentioned, eliminating the impact of the discretionary management incentive compensation expenses in excess of the amounts accrued in the first quarter of 2014, on a pro forma non-GAAP basis, Atlas generated 20 cents of diluted earnings per common share for the three-month period ended March 31, 2014. On slide 14, we highlight some of the particulars surrounding our current book value per common share. Overall, we increased book value by 25 cents during the quarter, largely driven by operating profit. Now let me touch quickly on investments. As shown on slide 15 of our presentation, Atlas's cash and invested assets at March 31, 2014 were $142.8 million as compared to $139.9 million at December 31, 2013. The duration of our investment portfolio matches the expected liquidity requirements for our claim payment needs, with our philosophy centered on the preservation of capital to support our growth. Our current duration is 3.9 years, and fixed income securities with an S&P rating of A or better represent 87.3% of our investment holdings. The average rating of our portfolio is AA. Additional details regarding our investment portfolio are provided on slide 16. With that, let me turn the call back to Scott for his concluding remarks.
Thanks, Paul. I'm proud to say that we continue to remain on track with each of our business initiatives. Our goal has been to gain a proportionate share in the niche markets where we operate. In addition, we've continued to review potential opportunities to accelerate that process during the current market cycle. Last night, we filed an 8K, which was available early this morning, which disclosed that we entered into a $10 million standby credit facility with Fifth Third Bank. This facility provides a flexible form of financing to pursue business opportunities. As we've consistently discussed, we expect strong organic growth and M&A to play important parts in Atlas's growth towards a proportionate 20% market position. This facility will help ensure we can take advantage of opportunities as they develop. Our team is confident that we're on the right track, continuing to cultivate our relationships with independent agents, driving vertical growth within our expanded geographic footprint, staying strict in our underwriting and pricing criteria, leveraging a focused claim service and overall expertise that we feel is difficult to replicate, and lastly, remaining committed to what we are, a specialty insurer focused on profitable growth and long-term value creation. As always, I want to thank our skilled and committed team for Atlas's many accomplishments so far this year. Donna, we're now happy to take questions on the first quarter results.
Thank you. At this time, we will be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Once again, that is star 1 to register your questions at this time. Our first question today is coming from Dan Farrell of Stern AG. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, and good morning.
Hi, Dan. How are you?
Good morning.
Good. Good. I was hoping you could comment a little bit more about current loss trend that you're seeing in your book. Obviously, the broader commercial auto market, has seen some adverse trend, but you're obviously very specific niche. So I was wondering if you could just go into a little more detail on what you're observing in your business.
Absolutely. I think there's two key components that we should focus on. The first is because our companies were not writing a significant amount of premium when the market was particularly soft, we simply weren't deploying capital into the space. When you look at the adverse development other larger commercial auto carriers are reporting now, it is tending to be from those accident years where our companies simply weren't active. And so that's one factor. The second, I think, is just pricing discipline. You know, when you look at commercial auto more broadly, about half of it, you know, we think represents or is represented by the heavier commercial. Rates did get very, very competitive, particularly for large fleet truck insurance back during that soft market period as well. I think that's just catching up with a lot of the players in the overall commercial auto space. I think at a macro level, those are probably the two key components that differentiate. And then more specifically to our business, one of the things that made the specialty light commercial niche so attractive to us is the fact that it tends to be, and has been over multiple market cycles, hyper-elastic to the market hardening. And that really is driven by the fact that in soft markets, a lot of capacity is provided through managing general agents. And those are generally the underpriced programs that will go away fairly quickly. And then during hard markets, you know, we see greater than average improvement in terms of loss ratio and ability to capture rate because of the fact that you see the smaller competitors, as I touched on, raising rates, but some of the larger generalists simply exiting. And so there becomes a supply-demand imbalance, which is favorable, you know, for the insurance companies that remain committed to the niche. So I think it's really the combination of those general issues coupled with the more specific features of our niche that are driving that.
That was helpful. And then I was hoping you just comment on the current environment for M&A in your niche, and then also M&A or smaller books of business. Thank you.
Sure.
So we have been very active over the last few years, reaching out to companies that are in our niche, with the idea that we want to have a dialogue with those companies that we believe have fundamental capability that could be complementary to ours. You know, the gateway transaction we completed last year was a good example of that. And so we do have a very active dialogue. We are not at a point in any transaction where we've publicly disclosed that we, you know, expect to move forward with anyone. But, you know, we are talking very specifically with some potential targets. We are only interested in making an acquisition if it is clearly strategic and if we believe it will be accretive in the near term, which is part of why we've been very paced, I think, in terms of how quickly we have more formally pursued, you know, some potential transactions. But, you know, the two areas we're really looking at are going to be ability to expand share in larger segments where we'd like to have physical infrastructure incremental to what we already have. And the second area would be what you touched on, which would potentially be, you know, very economical acquisitions of books of business, things that could accelerate organic growth by taking advantage of a competitor who has decided to exit the niche but may have a relatively significant renewal book that we can access, but then underwrite based on our own underwriting model and pricing and pay really only for the business that we end up writing going forward.
Great. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from Brian Holdenden of Sidoti. Please proceed with your question.
Morning, Brian.
Good morning, guys, and thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Approximately what percent of gross premiums written comes from independent agents who are new to Atlas compared to those agents who you have worked with in the past?
The first quarter was pretty consistent with last year, where about 30% of the premiums written is coming from agents who are new or have been newly appointed in the last 2 to 3 years after we created Atlas, where about 70% are coming from agents who had been agents of Atlas prior to, or agents of our insurance companies prior to our acquiring them under Atlas. You know, and really, I think that is fairly representative of what we expect going forward. You know, we may see the percentage coming from new agents growing a bit because most of those new agents are in geographic territories that our companies hadn't written in before. But, you know, we are very pleased with the amount of recapture business we're getting from those pre-existing agents. And as I mentioned on the call, or on the formal remarks in the call, we do expect that recapture process to continue to provide incremental growth over the next 12 to 18 months.
Great, thank you. And just a second question. In California, it looks like gross written premiums was lower year over year. In some markets, is pricing weak or is volume down due to another reason?
No, we're just being careful in terms of expanding in that state, as with any state, you know, where we're expanding market share. Our focus in California is in certain geographic territories. You know, I won't expand on that for competitive reasons, but, you know, there are parts of California that we find very attractive right now and other parts that we are cautiously paying attention to wait to see what, you know, certain competitors do, where we think that the rates may be underpriced relative to our profit targets right now. But we still see California as a very high potential state. It's a very large market for what we do. And there was a competitor writing through managing general agents who exited about 6 months ago, who had almost an $80 million book of business in light commercial. So there is an awful lot of business in play out there. Again, we just want to be very careful about making sure that we're writing the right business relative to our business model and underwriting requirements.
Okay, and then similarly, you're licensed to write in 49 states. However, you're writing currently in 40. You know, when do you anticipate in writing these additional states?
At this point, the 40 states plus D.C. we're in are the states that we feel meet our three criteria, you know, which we've consistently applied, and those are the ability to write 1 to 5 million in premium within the first 12 to 18 months if it's a state we organically entered, a state where we believe our value proposition stacks up well relative to competitors, and finally and importantly, a state that the legal and insurance regulatory environment will support underwriting profit. And so there are a couple of states within the ones where we're not active that would meet the first two criteria, but we're not comfortable that we would be in a good position to generate an underwriting profit. And so those are the states that we are currently choosing not to write in. But, of course, we are monitoring, just like we monitor the states we're active in, to make sure that those three criteria remain true over time. So for the time being, we do not have any specific plans to enter those additional states, but are monitoring them to see if, you know, there is a change in the three criteria that we use to make that determination.
Thank you.
Thanks for the question.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from Morgan Frank of Manchester Management. Please proceed with your question.
Morning, Morgan. Good morning.
Morgan.
Quick housekeeping issue. When you talked about accruing for these sorts of management compensation packages in the future, did Q1 also include accrual for this bonus for 2014? And if so, how
it
much?
Did. It did. So when we broke out the numbers in the presentation, the $500,000 we talked about was the amount that was incremental to the accrual for Q1 based on our going forward accrual method. So the remainder is the difference between that $500,000 and the $824,825 that we mentioned, so about $325,000. And an important point that I'll mention too, the board, you know, every year sets an ROE target in terms of when the bonus pool can start filling for the leadership team. Last year, based on the fact that we hadn't reached minimum efficient scale, that ROE target was in the low teens, and there's a series of buckets that fill based on the company's ROE, first filling for the non-executive members of our leadership team and then for the executive members. This year, the ROE target is in the high teens, based on where we ended last year and what our expectations are for this year. So, you know, we will be accruing throughout this year based on the high teen target, you know, that was set by the board.
Got it. Okay. Thanks very much.
Thanks for the question.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from Matthew Berry of Lane 5 Capital. Please proceed with your question.
Hello, guys.
Hi, Matthew.
So with the $60 million shelf registration filed a couple of weeks ago and the $10 million credit facility, that gives you a sort of a $70 million pool of capital that you're looking at, which is about the same size as your book equity and a little bigger than your surplus. By my calculations, your organic growth opportunities this year and next, when you include the profits that are coming in from your business, is unlikely to hit your 2x net written premium leverage maximum. So I was wondering if you could comment on the sort of the M&A opportunities and the size of opportunities that you're actually looking at, because that's, you know, the $70 million compared to $50 million of surplus and $67 million of book equity is a large is a large pool of capital. So could you just talk about the scale of things that you think are out there that you would consider?
Sure, and I want to be clear, you know, we're not going to be able to address specific questions about the registration statement or related issues, but in terms of M&A and our view on M&A, you know, we are only going to consider something that, again, that is strategic for us, consistent with what we've always articulated was our business plan, and at a valuation that we feel is attractive. In terms of size, you know, we are looking at deals that potentially range from a couple of million dollars, which could be sort of bolt-on, to 10 to as much as 30 million. So there's a lot of different potential scale. But as I touched on in the formal remarks, you know, we have been very paced. Because we really look at capital allocation as being as much a competency of ours as the ability to run the specialty insurance businesses. So we aren't going to buy something just to buy it, but we do want to have the flexibility to be able to move at an appropriate speed to take advantage of an opportunity that comes up, where our ability to be nimble and the fact that we are experts in the niche and really understand it well and we understand these potential targets well, should give us an advantage over somebody else who might be interested in a similar property.
And the things that you're looking at, are they small carriers only, or are you looking at agents and MGAs, people where you could pick up their business and then roll it on to Atlas paper?
So we're looking at both. The one thing I would want to be very clear about is we will not appoint an MGA and simply give them our paper so that they can continue operating independently. There are certain MGAs that we believe have strong underwriting capability, and or they have books that would be valuable if we underwrote them directly. And so, you know, when we talk about acquiring renewal rights on a program like that, it would only be to accelerate marketing efforts where we would continue to do all the underwriting and pricing in-house. We would not assume an in-force MGA book of business at the rates that they had written, whether or not we think they were good underwriters up to that point. Again, we think it's critical that we do the underwriting in-house, we make the pricing decisions, and that any business we write, is written under those disciplines.
Okay, good. And then one final question, if I can be so selfish, is just to ask for a quick update on how you guys are getting on with your technology programs aimed at reducing all of the manual data input and repetition that's currently in the system.
Good. We're on target. We are, as planned, rolling out the front end, the agent portal, mid-year this year, and that will allow agents to directly enter application information so that it'll flow into our system. Again, we will be doing the underwriting in-house, so it's not pushing authority out, but it will eliminate duplicate data entry, which we expect to not only create operating efficiency for us, but the feedback we've gotten from agents is that that's going to be a real positive. And as I think we've touched on in previous calls, it's an area that they indicated they would like to see us, make improvements on. And so, the implementation this year is going to be another example of us demonstrating to them that we're committed to the things that are important to our business partners. Again, it's an important part of our overall message to the market, which is that, we're committed to this niche and we are willing and able to be more nimble than bigger generalists who just aren't as committed. And we expect that to garner a lot of goodwill, not only in the current firm and to hardening market, but also in the future, when the market inevitably starts to soften.
And so when that rolls out mid-year, do you expect to see any sort of bump up in growth due to an accelerated throughput?
Well, right now it's not slowing our growth, but, as I touched on, we did hire, entry level. A lot of that was to facilitate the flow of paper and make sure that we were able to respond to every application and every opportunity to write good business. The availability of that direct, to agent portal to enter information will eliminate the need to continue to hire at that level at the same pace. So I don't think I'd look for a specific bump, but it will contribute to operating efficiency. As we've mentioned, we are targeting and expect to be in a 10 to 12% range for other underwriting expense. Things like that technology is what's going to help us over time gravitate towards the 10% as opposed to staying closer to the 12%.
Perfect. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the questions.
Thanks, Matthew.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from Fang Li of Baleen Capital. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hi, Fang.
I had a question on a couple of questions on the growth in the quarter. I know that Chicago was a drag on, I guess the Chicago tax renewal was a drag on growth. Could you give a sense of what your organic growth was for the quarter excluding Chicago?
So it's not so much that it's a drag on growth. I think the point we want to make is that it's because the first quarter is a big denominator, partially because of the Chicago taxi, and just in general, Illinois is the most mature market that our companies have. It's where they've been riding the longest. And so, as our market penetration gets higher for a particular quarter, the relative growth year over year may be slower than it will be in quarters where a bigger mix of our business is less mature. So I think it's hard to give a specific delta on Illinois versus non-Illinois, just as we sit here, because I don't have it pre-calculated. Happy to do the math and circle back with you, Fang. But I think it's the important takeaway, I think, is that, you know, it is a historically big quarter. We obviously saw 49% growth in the core, which is very good growth. We're very satisfied with what we saw in the first quarter. But we just wanted to caution people that, you know, relative year-over-year growth in more mature quarters may be different than year-over-year growth in quarters where we have less established market positions. You know, it's much easier to go from 1 or 2% market share to 4 or 5% than it is to go from 7% to, say, 14%.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm smiling because as I listen to you, because I'm kind of, you know, when you hear 49% core, it's kind of nitpicking to be unsatisfied with that. So it's a great job.
It's an important question. And, you know, and again, I know everybody, you know, wants to be able to try to, you know, conceptualize, you know, how is seasonality going to potentially change and or, you know, what should expectations be? And you know, since we have consistently not given forward guidance, you know, we do want to try to share at least our view on what we've seen.
Right. And I mean, basically, because Q1 is so large and so mature, I mean, so the other quarters will be more, I mean, should grow a little bit faster than in Q1, without putting words in. Well, but my next question was on the gateway, the difference between net premiums versus gross written premiums, and I just didn't fully understand that, so I was wondering if you could walk me through that.
Yeah, sure. So when we acquired Gateway in Q1 of 2014, we entered into a reinsurance contract to seed off all the risks related to the workers' comp program that Gateway had on its books when we purchased. The effect of that is to seed off the premiums in the first quarter, and the impact there was about $5.3 million in the first quarter. So when you look at net written premium in the first quarter, it's going to take a dip in the first quarter of 2013 related to this $5.2 million of cession for this workers' compensation program. You know, without that impact, when we look at year-over-year growth, it's pretty consistent with the growth that we're seeing and expected to see in the gross written premium lines. So that was kind of... It was a one-time impact in the first quarter of 2013 that, you know, unless we enter into another agreement like that, you're not going to see that moving forward.
I see. And so that makes the year-over-year comparison for net kind of less meaningful for this quarter.
Yeah, I think you really need to back out the effect of that, you know, and then look at it without the workers' comp session.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Awesome. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks for the questions,
Frank.
Thank you. Once again, if you do have a question today, it is *1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question is coming from Adam Patinkin of David Capital. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, guys. Congratulations on another nice quarter.
Thanks, Adam.
Great. So I wanted to go through a couple quick questions. So first, on the underwriting loss ratio, so you guys have kind of consistently said that you were writing to a 60% underwriting loss ratio, and it looks like where you guys have been booking it has been kind of stabilizing at 63.4%. Do you expect that your underwriting loss ratio will trend towards 60% over time, kind of in line with where you kind of say you've been writing business?
Yes. Yeah, and as I touched on in the formal remarks, you know, we do think it's appropriate to be conservative in the near term. You know, we are not managing the process to try to drive quarter over quarter earnings. What we want to do is every day make the right decisions in terms of building the most profitable business and driving long term value. So, you know, we are being, you know, a bit conservative, I think, in terms of recognizing potential benefit from rate increases. But that does not mean we're not taking and getting the right rate. You know, and in fact, in the first quarter, we definitely saw more opportunities to price to even better than a 60% in a lot of territories due to the competitive environment. So, you know, we do feel very good about the pricing we're getting. and the market environment. And yes, we do expect that, you know, over time the loss ratio will gravitate towards those pricing targets. As we've touched on before, you know, we wait to see if actual losses come in as expected before we feel like we should be giving full credit for the pricing activity.
Got it. And, you know, it seems like there's been a little bit of a change in your tone, where on previous calls you've always said you were writing to a 60%, and now on this call you've repeatedly said a 60% or better. Do you think that you could actually write to a, like, your underwriting loss ratio could go sub 60 at some point, kind of in line with what you saw last cycle?
Well, we're definitely seeing opportunities, and for those who may not know, you know, in the last cycle when the market hardened, you know, our insurance companies did ultimately report loss ratios fully developed in the low 50s, 52, 53%. That was a very hard cycle, and so I wouldn't want to say that, you know, we expect it to go there, but clearly, you know, there's support for the fact that, you know, our niche has been more elastic to the market cycles and commercial auto in general, and we are being opportunistic. So, you know, we will take advantage of opportunities to write to a better loss target. And we very intentionally touched on in this call, you know, we are able to do that in certain areas. We aren't able to do it everywhere, which is why we're not generally stating a lower than 60% specific number. But, you know, we do feel very good about the pricing that we saw go into the market in terms of the business we wrote in the first quarter.
Got it. And on the other underwriting expenses number, which came in at 13.8% this quarter, you've kind of maintained the long-term 10 to 12% guidance for that ratio. Do you think that ratio will go there? Do you still believe it'll go there, and is this something that you expect to happen within a year or over 5 years, or what's kind of your thought process in that?
Yes, we definitely expect it to fall within that range this year. It's that's based predominantly on scale and a recognition that as we continue to see, you know, these opportunities to grow, you know, we will need to continue to hire, you know, again, predominantly at the entry level. One of the key elements to our strategy originally was to maintain the expertise at the more senior level in the organization that existed when we bought our companies, knowing that they have the capability not only to deliver the kind of results that we're expecting, but also to train people who are coming into the business, younger, newer professionals, to run things and manage things the way that we do. We did anticipate and do anticipate moderate hiring, which is the main impact on our expense ratio. But with that in mind, we continue to believe that the 10 to 12% range is correct. In terms of where we are in that range, the more growth opportunity we have, the more likely it is that we will stay towards 12, because that growth does require support because it's volume of work. And then as things flatten out and as we get the benefit of things like the technology initiative that Matthew Berry touched on, we expect to gravitate down towards the lower end of that range, you know, closer to 10%.
Got it. And on that number, if you X out the $327,000 of incremental kind of other acquisition costs that you experienced in Q1 as a result of the accrual for the management bonus, you actually see that other acquisition costs didn't go up this quarter. They actually went down slightly, and on an absolute basis have been flat over the last three quarters. So, is this something where we should expect that on an absolute dollar basis, the other acquisition costs should be roughly flat or maybe grow a little bit but not have a big step up? Or do you think that, you know, I'm missing something on that?
Yeah, no, I think your analysis is right. Excluding accruals for the incentive comp, your conclusions are exactly right.
Yeah, because if I model that forward and assume that the absolute dollar value of other underwriting expenses doesn't grow or only grows a little bit looking into Q2 versus Q1, then I actually get another acquisition cost down to the 12% target as soon as next quarter. I guess it depends on what your premium written is, but do you think that I'm way off there on assuming that the absolute dollar amount doesn't grow that much or maybe even stays static?
Yeah, I want to stop short of forecasting for the next quarter, but your logic is sound.
Okay. And then on, you know, in general, I think, you know, when I look at the sell side estimates for you guys going forward, I'm still a little bit confused because they seem to have a bit of seasonality baked into the earnings numbers, whereas your earnings have been kind of consistently stepping up quarter over quarter. Am I right to say that your premium written will be seasonal, but because you earn premium, you know, on a 365-day basis as soon as the premium is written, that as long as you're growing gross written premium, or I'm sorry, net written premium, that you should actually see, you know, the level of earned premium grow quarter over quarter going forwards?
That's correct.
Okay. And so if I kind of wrap that all together, does, if you have a combined ratio that should be coming down, I mean, you're talking about, you know, 350 or more basis points to go in terms of underwriting loss ratio, you're talking about at least 180 basis points and maybe 380 basis points to go on other acquisition costs. So all in, you're talking about, you know, combined ratio that could fall as much as, you know, 500 to 700 basis points as you kind of move forward here, plus net written premium growing, which means earned premium should be growing as well, you know, every quarter, quarter over quarter. Shouldn't we see progressively, you know, kind of starting at the 27-cent base, that quarter over quarter earnings growth should be directionally up rather than down, with the one caveat that I know in Q3 your acquisition cost ratio steps up a little bit because of New York?
Yeah, I mean, the ranges that you talked about are the areas of opportunity, right? As we continue to benefit from scale, continue to be disciplined in terms of expenses, and just fundamentally take advantage of the continued pricing environment. And I do think that the 27 cents is a good base from which to build in terms of trying to think about earnings potential. You know, again, that's a pro forma number, but it adjusts out kind of the what we now expect to be non-recurring types of expense related to that incentive comp. So, you know, again, we don't want to specifically give guidance, but, you know, I think you're highlighting the areas of opportunity, and, you know, it we will recognize those, or we have the ability to recognize those by continuing to do the things that we've consistently done over the last 6 to 8 quarters.
Got it. And then just kind of one final question. So when you bring all of that together, and I'm going to have to update my model a little bit because I think maybe I'm assuming that the other acquisition costs could actually come in better than what I've kind of been modeling. You know, you're talking about a business here where you could earn, you know, I don't know, well north of a dollar, maybe I'm pretty close to $1.50 this year, and maybe even more than $2 a share next year, and your stock price is at $14, and you're talking about high, you know, ROE targets of at least the high teens and maybe even the low 20s. Companies like that tend to trade at, you know, 3x book, and they're not growing their top line at 50%+ a year. You know, is, you know, all of that would imply a share price, you know, $20 plus. What are you doing in terms of investor relations focus to kind of bring the story to a new audience, and especially to, you know, maybe an audience that would appreciate kind of the growth angle to the story?
Sure. I mean, it's, you know, our biggest priority is running the business, and so we have consciously not going on kind of the quote-unquote permanent roadshow that I think you see some companies go on. You know, we are looking at different potential venues to communicate the company's business plan that may be different than we've previously been involved in. As our market cap gets bigger, we get invited to more of those things also. So we will selectively participate in conferences that may be a market that haven't heard the story before. You know, because up to now, I think it is accurate to say that we are still a fairly little-known story, you know, although I think we do have good quality, you know, analysts who are looking at the stock, but still a relatively small number. And fundamentally, you know, from our point of view, the most important thing is continue to deliver increasing, you know, positive results by running and growing a more profitable than average business. You know, where, you know, we've consistently said one of our stated goals in starting the company, both, you know, near and long term, is exceed property casualty insurance industry ROE consistently across market cycles. And so, you know, by doing that, you know, we hope it will be a story that more and more people, you know, are interested in, and you know, that's really the basis for the approach. So You know, and again, we're always available, you know, to the extent that we have investors or analysts who are interested. You know, obviously we're sharing the same information. We're sharing publicly on calls and in presentations. But, you know, we do try to be very accessible to the extent that there are people who are new to the story who, you know, want to get caught up, as it were. And so we obviously will continue to take that approach.
Great. I think your focus is in the right place. Thank you, guys. And again, congrats on the quarter.
Great. Thanks for the question, Adam.
Thank you. At this time, I would like to turn the floor back over to management for any additional or closing comments.
Great. Thanks, Donna. And thank you to everyone for joining us. We look forward to speaking with each of you again on our second quarter results call.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This does conclude today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time and have a wonderful day.